So welcome everyone tonight, Saturday night, and Wan Pra as well, the full moon. When I was trying to think of what I might want to talk about tonight, I'm remembering that a couple of days ago, morning reflection, Ajahn Titipaño offered a few brief thoughts on contemplation of the body. We all had hoped he was going to say a little more than he did, but I have to fill in the blanks a little bit, but he introduced the importance of that topic and his growing commitment to really making that part of the regular practice. And so I thought I'd spend a bit of time rolling out a few ideas, thoughts about it, practices that I engage in on a regular basis, because it's a contemplation of the body is a very basic, fundamental practice that is highly emphasized in the Thai forest tradition. Lungpur Pasano, you know, has often particularly more in the early days and middle days of his teaching here, emphasized it over and over again in all of its different ways and aspects and means as essentially the core practice that he encourages both monastics and the lay community to take up. The Buddha really highly praises, highly suggests that this be a substantial part of the contemplative practice as well. In fact, some very strong statements in various parts of the canon that if one does not contemplate and fully understand and fully develop the practice of mindfulness immersed in the body, then there's really no chance, no hope for liberation. It's that key, having established the practice and fully developing the sense of what this body is and our sense of identification with it and how craving, clinging, and confusion and delusion can be so wrapped up in it. And it's one of the most powerful direct objects of meditation, subjects of meditation towards helping to unwind all of that. So, yeah, the confusion and the craving and the clinging that we experience in our lives, which, as we know from the Noble Truths, is essentially the cause of suffering, and the goal being to fully penetrate and understand and relinquish all the ways that we unskillfully relate to the body and to develop insight into what it is and our identification with it, that is the key to liberation. And it takes a lot of unpacking because we've packed a lot into it, into our experience, into our opinions of it and the ways that we use this body. And it needs to be unpacked so that we can see it for what it truly is and use it as a tool. Because we just blindly follow the desires, the cravings that arise in our hearts, in our minds, the wish for gratification, all for the reasons of wanting a truly stronger sense of security and contentment and happiness and gratification. And we use the body so much to try and accomplish that. Of course, it's not only the body, there's all the elements of the mind and those aspects too, but the body is where we can start to see it as it unravels day after day, month after month, year after year, in this constant confusing search for gratification, for stability, and for, yeah, a place to kind of land and, yeah, establish this sense of permanence, security, stability, and pleasure. And it's only when we don't get those, or we start to see the temporary nature of the pleasures that come and start to occasionally get experiences of pain, bodily deterioration, sickness, old age, eventually death, that we start to realize that it's not going to live up to what we expect or what we hope, or the ways that we try and hold on so strong to this sense of stability and identify this is mine or it's me, it's who I am. And when that gets challenged, the fear, the anxiety that can rise from that. So who wouldn't want to be free of those? I mean, that's what I think all of us are doing, seeking here. We want to be free of those conditions, those reactions, those habitual ways of relating to our experience, particularly our bodily experience. Yeah, and just that kind of forming of the desire to not be just dragged around by our cravings and our fears and our anxieties, not to be controlled by those, particularly as they're expressed in terms of the bodily experience. So we devise ways. The Buddha has taught many ways that we can start to chip away at this attachment and this craving. The two fundamental causes of dukkha, the underlying causes, are this craving, for pleasure, sensual pleasure, this craving for existence, and then also this craving to avoid unpleasantness, this craving to avoid pain. All these forms of craving are half the basis of the dukkha, the formation of the dukkha, and then this ignorance, this sense of just not knowing how our identification with this process controls our perceptual field and how that also contributes to the craving and the clinging that cause us so much suffering. So it's rooting up, we're trying to root up and root out the experiences of both craving and ignorance. And this is what the contemplations that the Buddha has given us around the body are aimed towards making a dent in. Ajahn Jeff has a really nice way of classifying some of the ways that we can relate to the bodily experience. I've always found it very useful to contemplate. He talks about four ways that we might be regarding the body. And the first two would be like regarding the body in an unskillful, but what we might call a positive way, which would be something like really admiring the beauty, the attraction that we can have. It's the way that sensual desire works towards regarding the body, always looking for the things that will excite and support and gratify tanha, the sensual desire, the way we attend to the body, always looking for and being fooled by some of the attractive aspects. That's what we focus our attention on, things that are, what we would normally consider attractive or beautiful. But that is a source of suffering because, of course, when that changes or when that's not available, then there's a lack. There's a feeling of lack. So there's this, what he would call unskillful, positive ways of regarding the body because it gets us into trouble, even though it feels good in the beginning or feels good at times. And then there's unskillful negative ways of regarding the body. And that's when, say, people have, we talk a lot about poor body image or judging oneself or judging others based on the opposite appearance, the appearance of unattractiveness of, someone's particular body or one's own particular body and measuring and judging and comparing and developing a real complex around what's attractive, what's not attractive, and judging negatively others or oneself around that ideal leads to a lot of dukkha. Then he also describes skillful ways of regarding the body. Skillful negative ways would be some of the practices that we use to call attention to the reality of what the body is like the contemplation of the 32 parts of the body, or the cemetery contemplations, corpses that are, decaying. And these are pretty strong images, and they're often practices that are downplayed or not taught very much in the West because people develop such a negative reaction to them and kind of, you can be accused of being a real downer, a killer of pleasure if you talk about these things too much. But they're a way to help neutralize this excessive desire, this excessive ignorant way that we can view the body with this unskillful positive ways, only attending to that which is beautiful and missing that which is not so beautiful. So it's a way of cutting those rose-colored glasses that you like to wear to only see that which is evocative of desire. And if you're tired of being dragged around by that, then some of these practices, like the 32 parts, are a great way of neutralizing it, as long as you don't develop a sense of negativity around it, a sense of you know, discussed to the point of turning it into a negative self-view, but neutralize those very strong, powerful ways that we have of seeing things the way we want to see them and not being very realistic about it. So these are skillful, but have the quality of negativity if they're taken too far. And then the skillful, positive ways of regarding the body would be seeing it as what it is. It can be used as a vessel for spiritual realization, as the Buddha suggests that we do. These contemplations of the body can be used to take us all the way to freedom through non-attachment, freedom through non-identification. And if we can develop that level of deep insight in regard to the true nature of the body, then that's a major doorway into relinquishment and freedom. So this is a skillful way of positively regarding the body. And there's a number of contemplations that help to encourage that and developing the pleasurable experiences that are also conducive to realization, like with meditation, using the body in that way to develop an alternative to the sensual, the reliance on sensuality for happiness, develop an alternative through using the body as a tool for developing very peaceful, blissful, pleasurable, but in a spiritual sense, states of understanding the body. So I thought that was a real skillful way of dividing up our experience, how we relate to the body, and gives us a bit of a reason as to why to abandon the unskillful ones, because we see that they won't lead to anything satisfying in the long run, and to, yeah, really develop and encourage those skillful ways, whether it's considered quote-unquote negative or quote-unquote positive. So I just spend a couple of minutes kind of fleshing out a few of these as I use them. The contemplations of the body within the Satipatthana Sutta, which is our foundational reference point for skillful contemplations that can lead us to liberation. The contemplations around the body being the first of the four foundations, or the first of the four establishings of mind, mindfulness, being all around how to use the body to detach ourselves from sensuality, to detach ourselves from excessive craving and desire and being pulled around by that, and to develop insight. So the Satipatthana, not only used to develop and explore these four avenues that Ajahn Jeff describes, but also it's a kind of a full development of what we would call samatha and vipassana. All of the contemplations of the body, and really the other three foundations too, but speaking tonight specifically about the body, all of these contemplations can be used to develop both calm and insight, samatha and vipassana. And the structure of the sutta itself really expresses that very clearly. It's an incredible sutta of instruction, practical instruction for us. So it's an incredible tool to fully develop both the calm and the insight that we need to gather into samasamadhi, a totally collected mind that can see and experience and know the world directly. It's also the way that the number of contemplations that are offered in contemplation of the body. This is just sort of a way that I like to regard it, that some of them are more regarded towards what I call perception changing. In other words, correcting some of our misperceptions of the body along the lines of what I was talking about, the ways we hold the body is either attractive or unattractive, and to help neutralize and change how we perceptually view the body into something that's more of a direct experience of just what it is. So there's the perception-changing contemplations like the 32 parts to get us to see it a little bit more clearly, the cemetery contemplations. Those are perception-changing practices. And then there's the contemplation of the body practices that are more pointing towards a direct here and now contemplation, both for calm and insight, like our, you know, basic go-to contemplation on Anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing, is pointing more towards direct in-the-moment experience. Or contemplation of the four elements can be sort of a bridge between both a conceptual practice, but more pointing towards a direct experience of the four elements or the dispositions of the body, knowing when we're, what the four postures are, that we're standing, sitting, walking, or lying down, or the various activities of the body as it goes through its motions of the day, so that there's a clear comprehension of, you know, just the movement of the body through space. And the more one is able to make those consistent over all postures, then a sense of clarity and being in the body, bodily awareness, will increase. So we've got the perception-changing contemplations and the direct experience contemplations all wrapped into this first part of the Satipatthana. So very rich field for developing all of those aspects and leading to a calm sense of clear knowing. So just to mention briefly and kind of really encourage people who are interested to pick up something like the 32 parts of the body. It's outlined in the Satipatthana Sutta. We chant it fairly regularly in our chanting book. It's the recitation is in the chanting book. People are interested. And it's just a recitation that's encouraged to develop a different perceptual experience of the body. So as it goes, it's, we regard this body from the toes of the feet up and down from the crown of the head. And just as it is, it's essentially a container, a bag of skin, is the way the sutta talks about it, filled with all sorts of things that we oftentimes don't really think about. And then we go through the list of the 32 parts, both as a visualization, as a memory thing, as a calming kind of a practice. And it helps us cut through the illusion of what we think the body is and how we regard it and see it more clearly for just what it is. In and of itself, it's also just very tranquilizing, very cooling, and very pretty down to earth. And it's worth spending some time with. So just to sit quietly and think about these parts of the body that we don't normally even notice. It starts with the five external parts of the body, which is part of the contemplation given to novices on their ordination. It's considered the basic fundamental contemplation that all budding monastics should take part of. And I think it's just equally valid for lay people who are interested in not being ruled by appearance anymore, people who want to see what truth is all about. So we just start with that visualization and that contemplation of hair of the head, hair of the body. And you can just visualize those aspects of the human body. You know, so much time we spend on making the hair of the head look quite beautiful, the way we cut it, the way we trim it, the way we regard it, the amount of time we put into it. And, you know, and it all works for a while you're younger. But as time goes on and the hair gets thin and gray and falls out and, you know, becomes less attractive, then if you've relied on that for some sense of self-identity or appearance or attraction, then it'll be sad when that all goes away. It'll be difficult. So regarding just what is it? It's just protein in long strands coming out of the head. And we can look at it with a sense of attractiveness and pleasure. But what happens when we look down at our meal from in the restaurant and see the cook's hair in our food? It doesn't have quite the same appeal to it as it does when we're looking in the mirror or looking at somebody else who has quote-unquote attractive hair. So get a sense of realism around something like that, or the nails, the toenails and the fingernails that we can spend time dolling up and making look good. But again, think, you know, when it gets older and those toenails are turning yellow and getting thick and hard to trim and maybe getting a bit of fungal infections or things like that, well, what happens to one's perception of the beauty of nails or teeth, you know, nice straight white teeth that eventually maybe get crooked or maybe are always been crooked and turn yellow and maybe even start to fall out. You know, what's really inherently attractive about teeth? Skin, you know, that's the biggest one, I think, of the external ones. Just to realize that, you know, that healthy, nice tight jawline, that skin around it, it's going to sag, it's going to droop, and we'll start getting, you know, dry skin and different kinds of infections. And so really, what's the, you know, why are we trying to fool ourselves around that? It's because it gives a temporary sense of pleasure and enjoyment, not to be refuted, but the more one attaches to that and finds that as a source, making attractive features out of it all, then the more one will suffer when it eventually changes in ourselves or others. And that's just the surface. Then we've got all the internal organs, the kidneys and the heart and the liver and the spleen and all the membranes and the bones and the muscles and the sinews and all the internal organs like the intestines and the stomach, and then all the bodily fluids that the list goes through. So it's just a way of, hold on a second, what is it that I'm so attracted to here? What is it that I'm so scared about when it changes? What is it that I fear when it gets sick? You know, what is involved? Well, it's all hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin. What about when I'm comparing myself to other people, or thinking myself as, you know, really attractive, or thinking myself as really unattractive in regards to other people? And then you look at other people and think the same thing. Well, this contemplation is really good, because all you have to do is say, oh, that's just hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin. Over there, right here, over on the other side of the room, just looking around and just seeing that's all it is. What's the big deal? So just to really encourage that, again, not as a way of becoming aversive and not as a way of saying that, you know, one can't enjoy certain sensual pleasures, but just to notice the transiency of that. Is that where we want to stake our claim in terms of finding happiness in life in the long term? So contemplation of those 32 parts, just to cool things down, to neutralize, and just really encourage that and to, you know, use it, whether you're a monastic, I mean, certainly if you're a monastic, but also as a layperson. And then to watch also how we regard the body and how we can start to change that way of orientation towards it as a source of pleasure and pain, and turn it into more of a source of insight and spiritual development, moving it into the positive and skillful ways of regarding the body. The four elements is one of the contemplations too that I like to spend time with, and find that very useful just to help focus, say when I'm walking back and forth to my kuti or on my walking path. And it's kind of a very simplified version of the 32 parts in a sense, and that it's grouping things according to the category of earth, water, fire, and air. And these can be direct, more direct experiences that somewhat abstract and conceptual, but that only goes so far, and used wisely can move into a very in-the-moment direct experience of the body. So that, say, walking up to one's kuti and just noticing the density of earth, all the bones and muscles and organs, everything can be consolidated into an experience of density, earthiness, solidity. And just noticing that, focusing on that as one is, you can do it in a sitting posture, of course, you can do it right now while I'm talking about it. But it's also quite a good way of focusing the wandering mind when one is walking to and fro, either in walking meditation or around the monastery or your own property. Just notice that earth quality and keep it simple like that. That's all it has to be. Or the fluidity, the motion, the water element, whether it's the direct water element like the various bodily fluids that one can experience, the tears or the mucus, the saliva, those very obvious watery things, or just the motion of the body, which is dependent on fluid. So noticing the swaying of the body back and forth as it moves along, trying to maintain balance, and that sense of motion, or the airiness, the lightness that can be in the body at times, and the not only the in and out breathing, the air moving in and out, but just that, yeah, that sense of vibration, of energy, of airiness. And then the heat element, warm, cold, energetic, metabolizing things going along, heavy or dull after the meal. Those qualities of heat, cool, the fire element. So just basically breaking it down into that is developing a really direct experience, a here and now experience with the body that really starts to pull the attention into a very direct experience. The third step in the Anapanasati Sutta, I think, is a really important contemplation because it points out, in the Pali is sabbakaya patisangveti, sabbakaya meaning the entire body, patisangveti meaning very sensitive to, or very sensitive to this entire body, fully experiencing this entire body. So that these contemplations help draw one into a full direct experience, not just an abstraction of this bodily and its bodily energies. And that's also the goal of just our general go-to Anapanasati, noticing the in and out breathing as it helps to calm and tranquilize the body, but also pulls us into more of a direct energetic experience, moving from the tactile sensations of the body, like with the four elements, and then the breathing process itself, into more of the subtle body, the interior energetic patterns that we can feel as we get more and more sensitive. So all of these are pulling us in the direction of both changing our perceptions of how we regard the body and the ways that we fool ourselves, and into more of a direct moment, in-the-moment experience of the body. So as we do these and we develop these, we really, the sense of calming and peace and simplicity will come. That's the samatha practice, the settling. And with that clarity of mind, we can start to develop a bit more insight. And that's part of the satipatthana. Sometimes it's referred to as the refrain in each of the contemplations of the satipatthana, where the Buddha gives the instruction, in this way, one regards the body in its external form or its internal form, essentially the bodies of ourselves, the bodies of others, how we regard them. One sees the body in this way, one contemplates the body in this way, externally, internally. One contemplates it in its arising and in its passing form, so that we see the constant change that the body is undergoing. And various things come into being, various experiences, bodily experiences come into being, and then they pass away. Health is there for a while, passes away. Illness might come upon us, and then it changes back to health. So vitality comes, and then it goes away. So contemplating the constant changing nature, even of the in and out breathing, contemplating that constantly changing rhythmic pattern, then one gets to see that there is not a fixed form of this body. It's a constantly moving, changing mass of experiences. And then the third part of that refrain is one that I bring into contemplation very often. And I think it's the culmination of the practice of the contemplation of the body, where the wording is like, or else mindfulness that, quote, there is a body, unquote, mindfulness that there is a body is present to the extent needed for clear, direct knowing and mindfulness. So that kind of sometimes might sound a little bit, well, what's so big deal about that? There is a body. But it really points to that non-attached beginning of the separation of this quality of awareness, of pure knowing, from all of the experiences that we call the body. So there's the bodily and experience of, I'll say, the four elements or the various pains or pleasures, the sensory experiences, the sights and sounds and tastes, tactile sensations, all the sense objects, sense bases, all of these experiences. And then there's this quality of the knowing of those, the consciousness, in a sense, of all of these bodily experiences. And when one starts to develop these practices to their fullest extent, there starts to become this separation of the knowing quality and then the experiences that is the subject or the object of the knowing quality. And this sense of oh, it's all it is there is a body. It's not me. It's not mine. There's really no control over it. And ultimately, it's just doing what it does. Bodies do what they do. And one can really get a sense of that when sitting quietly, the mind is settled through some of these practices, less attachment, less confusion. Then you just see this constantly changing experience of a body doing what a body does. It twitches, it moves, it swallows, it breathes, the heart beats. None of this is something that requires our conscious attention and conscious control. It's this body. It's just living out its nature, its true nature. And we can know that, and we can watch that. We can see it go through all of its various phases and aspects and pleasures and pains, but we don't have to buy into it as who we are. There is a body. So when you start to get that sense and that realization and that insight slowly starts to develop, oh, this isn't who I am. It's just a body. And there's this knowing that can know that. And then you start to stay with that knowing quality more and more and develop it not only around the body, but of all the aspects of mind, all the feelings and perceptions and ideas and attitudes and thoughts and emotions. All of these things, we can develop that sense of knowing quality in regard to these various aspects of our experience and see it as something that is universal throughout all of these body and mind experiences. But the most important place to really start and finish probably with is with this body, because it's a direct experience that we can know very much and very clearly, not get lost. It helps pull us from the realm of abstraction and conceptualization and down to the level of direct experience, which is what these contemplations are really intended to move us towards, more of a direct experience of this body and also this mind. And when we do that and we see, yeah, that this isn't really who we are and that it's constantly changing, this body of ours, then there's this sense of disenchantment. We're no longer fooled by it. We've taken the rose-colored glasses off and we're just seeing it for what it is, in all of its pleasures and all of its pains and all of its transiency. And it's just doing what it's doing. And then you start to have more of a sense of fearlessness too, so that when old age, sickness, the signs of approaching death maybe, when they start to come, it's sort of, okay, this is just part of nature. This is the way it's supposed to happen. I don't need to hold a lot of fear around this. I can just settle back in and know it for just what it is. It's okay. So it's a very powerful tool that the Buddha has given us. And if we were looking for true freedom, then it's right here. It's ready for us to pick up and use for our benefit. So just to really encourage that the practice in all of its aspects, it's a lifetime of practice if one wants to make it that. And when one develops the sense of ease and well-being that comes from it, and the spiritual pleasure that can come from developing the meditation and the calming and the sense of bodily presence and using it while we can, while we still have some vigor in the body, some life in the body, and maybe some years left if we're lucky. And then it can become a tool for a very, very refined form of a pleasurable experience that is also commensurate with leading to insight and relinquishment of our attachment, of our identification with it. And then it just becomes an incredible, powerful tool for clarity and peace and liberation. So what more to say? Just time to get on with it. We'll leave that for tonight's contemplation.